Hello, and welcome back to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and today we're going to talk about nutrition. There are so many articles out there about nutrition that it gets totally confusing. I don't know about you, but when I read those articles, the temptation is to go out and follow the advice. But the problem is that sometimes this article flies in the face of the articles you read yesterday. So there's a lot of information and misinformation out there in the press and on the bookshelves. Today we're going to talk with Dr. Anthony Martin, a Canadian who is a PhD in nutrition and has been practicing naturopathic medicine for some 30 years. And he has a very interesting approach here that looks at your body a little bit like your car and says, wouldn't it be nice if there were some gauges on your body, just as there are on the car, the little warning lights that say, check your engine or check the oil pressure or something like that. And he's pointing to four gauges, if you will, that we ought to pay attention to. And we're going to talk with him today about those four gauges. And in particular, he's been studying chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. His wife is affected with these, so he has a very personal interest in it. But he's also been practicing for many other people for quite a number of years. So let's listen to this little message, and we'll be right back to talk with Dr. Martin. This program is brought to you as a public service by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. We will be glad to answer as many of your questions as possible. If we use your question on the air, we will send you one of the CDs that we've used in the production. And again, the website is powerfulpatient.org. We're back with you now to speak with Dr. Anthony W. Martin. He is a PhD in nutrition, and he's written a book called Medical Crisis, Secrets Your Doctor Won't Share With You. Welcome, Dr. Martin. Could you give us a little bit of background about yourself and your practice, please?
I'm Dr. Anthony Martin. I practice, and I've been practicing natural medicine now for almost 35 years. Scary thought. And been researching almost exclusively chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. As a matter of fact, when I got my PhD in nutrition, when I finished my thesis in 97, it was on chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. And so I've had a great interest in people who have a lack of energy. And through that research, actually developed a protocol for treatment, certainly not a cure for chronic fatigue, but a treatment. Mm-hmm. But more than that, Joyce, and this is where this book comes in, Medical Crisis, Secrets Your Doctor Won't Share With You. I've developed a testing program that initially for people who had chronic fatigue, but I now really has spilled over to the general public, and where I do testing on biomarkers, pH, free radicals, inflammation, other tests, but these main three, and I believe will give us an indication years and years ahead of time whether your body is heading down towards a path of destruction, either to cancer mostly or cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we can detect that much ahead of time. And what I do, Joyce, in my book is I talk about one of the illustrations I use is if you take out a ballpoint pen and just look at the tip of it, and I ask my patients this question, you know, how long do you think it takes cancer, for example, in breast tissue for women or even in the prostate for men, to get to the size of that tip of the ballpoint pen? Well, the majority of my patients, well over 90%, think that that happens quite quickly, within 48 hours or a week or 2 weeks, but not much longer than that, when in all actuality, it takes cancer to grow to even the size of a tip of a ballpoint pen 5 years. So by the time you would, you know, palpate or feel a lump, or even for, you know, what we call ordinary or routine blood tests, for them, x-rays or mammograms to come back positive, cancer and even cardiovascular disease has been there for years and years and years. So what I sort of stumbled on when I was studying people who didn't have any energy, and really this is the key, is that I call them warning signs, and they are biomarkers in the body. Just like, Joyce, if you were driving down the highway, you know, it's not a bad idea every once in a while to look at the dashboard in your car. You know, first of all, see if you have any gas. And second of all, if there's any lights coming on, like, you know, check the oil or check the engine or the engine's heating. So these are things that we have in our bodies, and we know about them in medicine, but we often don't use them to their full advantage. And really, that's what I talk about in my book.
Right. Tell us, what is a biomarker?
A biomarker, for example, is just a biological test that can be done on saliva, urine, blood, that, you know, would give you early indication of you know, where the status of your body. For example, pH is a biomarker. You can check your blood's pH, you can check your saliva's pH, and your urine pH.
So the pH is a measure of whether it's acidic or base.
Exactly.
So, but what does that have to do with how our body works?
It's very significant, Joyce, okay? Because, for example, if you use the illustration, the pool or a hot tub, mm-hmm. you're always, always checking the water, because if your water has become acidic, you have algae forming there, and you certainly don't want to swim or bathe in it, so you check the pH, and if it has become acidic, you want it to be highly alkaline, because then it's sterile. In the human body, the blood pH stays pretty alkaline. Because if it becomes acidic, it's very dangerous. So the body has lots of buffers to make sure your blood stays alkaline, because otherwise it would be deadly very quickly. Now,
I know that if the pH is wrong in your fish tank, your fish will die.
Well, that's exactly right. And what?
Right. And in your body, your skin is your biggest organ. So
yeah.
I suppose if you were in that hot tub and it was the wrong pH, your body's being sort of poisoned or thrown out of kilter, certainly, to
a
large extent. And you're saying that internally we also have things that can go wrong that cause our pH balance to go out of whack.
Yes, and this is really important, and it's a very easy test, right? I mean, the most accurate way to test your, you know, the only place you should be acidic in your body is in your stomach, by the way. Everywhere else, it needs to be alkaline between 7 and 7.4. Ideally, your body works at a much better level if your pH is right. Now, even more important than that, when you go back to the pool illustration, you know, cancer, for example, cannot grow in an alkaline environment. So if your pH is alkaline of your saliva, first thing in the morning, best time to check it, your chances of having any kind of growth that would proliferate there are next to nil. And we're finding out, you know, and even oncologists are starting to get to the point. They realize now that it's much more important to watch a person's pH to see if, you know, their body even is responding to cancer treatments, for example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are really, really important things. They're little biomarkers. They're very important. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people, Joyce, fall through the cracks because they're not getting these tests done. And these tests, again, would tell you much ahead of time whether your body is breaking down. But it's not only pH, of course. That's just one indicator.
Right. But, for example, with all the natural foods information that's coming out now, it's in every magazine, and we're bombarded with it. But they usually talk about a particular element. I was reading something just this morning about vitamin D. Vitamin D is good for you. Well, if I remember from school, too much vitamin D is not a good thing for you. It's
in fact
toxic.
Yeah.
Right? So somebody ought to check you and find out if you already do have enough vitamin D. And too much of that is not a good thing. So,
yeah, and you know, Joyce, you're absolutely right. And this is why indicators, you know, and these type of tests should be done. I mean, they're available.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, too much of a good thing. You know, I write in my book that, you know, in the 80s we took everybody out of the sun. Now we're throwing them back in, you know. And, you know, I mean, these things are really important. And they're very important to test. The things that I do in my office, exactly, check vitamin D levels. And But these little biomarkers, Joyce, are really, really key. And they're very, very preventative.
But how do you find a doctor who understands these things, is willing to do these things with you? Because not every doctor is up for this conversation.
Well, you're right, and that's why my title of my book, Secrets Your Doctor Won't Share With You. It's not that he doesn't know these things, Joyce, they do. It's just that to get them to think outside the box. I mean, they understand pH.
I'm not sure that all of them. Well, I mean,
you know, there isn't an MD in the world that doesn't understand pH. Of course they do.
Okay. So they
even free radicals, they understand the importance of them. But will they test them for it? It's a very simple urine test. And even more importantly, it's something that if they keep up on their research, they understand the importance of inflammation in the body. This is something I've been yapping about for a lot of years.
I do think, though, that a large number of doctors, I won't say all of them, but a large number of doctors are trained to look to the solutions from the pharmaceuticals and not from the natural things. I've had many doctors push back on me and say, but you can't measure the active ingredients in natural products, and so we can't really rely on them.
Mm-hmm.
The recent recommendation that everybody take a multivitamin is the first time we've really seen that kind of a recommendation coming out of the FDA. And I have not yet met a doctor, a regular standard Western medicine doctor, who is really up on the nutrition conversation. Seems like you need to go to a nutritionist or some homeopathy or something like that in order to find someone who's really astute on the nutritional side of the discussion.
Yeah.
What's been your experience with it?
Well, you're absolutely right, Joyce.
Someone to find this kind of
And we're trying to educate, Joyce. Like, we educate. There's a lot of more physicians that, listen, I told you how long I've been in practice. Can you imagine what it was like in the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
Or the 80s? I mean, you know, I was like, I felt like John the Baptist, you know, out in the wilderness crying out, right?
Yeah.
Alone. But now it's amazing. You know, I was asked this question. It's interesting because I did a radio interview last week in Canada and on a major network, and they were asking me because there was a story out about, you know, can vitamins be harmful to your health? Well, I said, listen, look at the background of this story. And I said, you know, medicine is frustrated because the general public, Joyce, for the first time really in the last, you know, as long as I, you know, there's been any recorded medical history, people question today. Like, it's fantastic because, you know, finally, you know, people don't, you know, medicine would like it to go back to the way it used to be. Like, don't question me. Here's the answers. And if, you know, like vitamins, they'll roll their eyes, or supplements, like you say, or getting even these biomarkers done. People don't even like to discuss it with their doctor because they usually get a lecture, or they feel like they're an idiot. But the public is not going to go back, Joyce. See, the public is very, very aware. Today with the Internet and shows, you know, like you have and things like that, people are not going to go back to the dark ages anymore.
Well, and they shouldn't.
No.
You know, the whole thrust of this program is that everybody does need to be in charge of their own health, but they have to be smart about it. You can't just read the article and take the vitamin of the week. I mean, that's not a smart way to do it for your body. But if you go into it with some analysis, you know, my particular body is rich in this element but is short on that element, maybe I need to boost it. But I think the other thing, because I was a great follower of Adele Davis in the 70s.
Okay? So was I.
And Adele Davis, who was a wonderful nutritionist of that era, said that for the most part we ought to try to get these elements in their native grouping,
sure.
Like the B vitamins are
yeah,
a set.
In the foods.
And if you take one of those B vitamins and not the others in the right balance, you can actually create a shortage of another
mm-hmm.
one.
Yeah.
So if we need to respect the balances that nature
yeah.
has created and where possible get these from food.
And that's where I come in, Joyce, because I'm a nutritionist. And I deal with food. I talk in my book about, you know, that food is the most important medication that you will take every day.
And on that tantalizing thought, let's take a little break and we'll be right back to speak some more with Dr. Martin. Please go to powerfulpatient.org on the internet. You will find there the handout that goes with this show with information about the people we've spoken with, the websites we've mentioned, and other background on this topic. And as always, we would appreciate your support. Please donate to the Cancer Research Fund and bring us back another day. Stay with us now and we'll be right back with Dr. Martin. Welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Anthony Martin, the author of the book Medical Crisis, Secrets Your Doctor Won't Share With You. And Dr. Martin, just before the break, you were saying that you feel that food is the most important medication you will take every day. Tell us some more about that.
Food is the most important medication that you will take every day. And
right.
and you know you hate to use the word, but it's true. And what the other thing that I've noticed, Joyce, especially since my work on chronic fatigue, is that I tell people now that food is no longer neutral, because a lot of people just eat to satisfy themselves. Where I remind them that food is so important today, especially in our day and age, with all the chemicals and everything, you know, with all the environmental factors and obesity out of control and all these things. I say, listen, food now really there's no neutral food. Food is either good for you or it's bad for you. And I agree with you, Joyce, 100%. I'm the one, and when you read my book, that's what I think is probably what makes the most sense. I talk about literally testing to see if there's any deficiency in your diet and then possibly supplementing, but at least increasing with foods the things that you're missing. For example, I talk a lot about the Western diet being very deficient in omega-3
mm-hmm.
because the people that I test in my office, and I literally test thousands of people blood, urine, and saliva every year, and one of the things that I find very common because of this day and age that we live in especially, that I've really found an enormous difference is the amount of inflammation I see.
Right.
And inflammation, it attacks healthy cells, and we're starting to learn a lot more about inflammation than we used to know. And one of the things that really counteracts the effect of this inflammation is omega-3. So
omega-3s are the friendly fats.
Exactly, your essential fatty acids.
We're definitely not short on fats, but
no.
We get the wrong fats.
Exactly, and so I really do. I agree with you 1,000% that, you know, we need to get things in balance. And people today can get these things tested to find out where they're deficient.
You mentioned earlier that it takes a cancer tumor as much as 5 years to get to the size of the tip of a ballpoint pen. So if we were watching some of these gauges that you mentioned, and there are four that you list in your book, the energy is one gauge of how well your body is doing. The pH, the acid or alkaline nature of your saliva is an indicator. The level of free radicals and the level of inflammation. And if we paid attention to those, we might be able to take some action within those first 5 years
sure.
to prevent a bigger problem in the future.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned too, Joyce, in the book that, for example, I'm starting to see type 2 adult onset diabetes in children. I never thought in my lifetime I would ever
wow.
see it, but it's becoming quite common today. And metabolic syndrome, where I'm seeing, you know, pre-diabetic conditions. Mm-hmm. And but the wonderful thing, and I tell people this, the body is fearfully and wonderfully made. You can change it. And if you change the habits, and you know, you can change a habit in 21 days. I get parents, especially, trying to get them to buy into helping children so they can avoid these things. And, you know, we see so many, like I see so much dietary issues in children today, you know, with asthma, with ADD, ADHD, even there's a link in autism and all these things that are out of control today. I mean, you know, one out of three children have asthma or allergies today. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but a lot of these things, Joyce, can be treated properly with food. Just the change in once parents understand where the deficiency is or where the allergy is.
Right.
You know, it really, really makes a difference. So, you know, they can buy into it and understand it, and they can correct these things.
So, for example, peanut allergy.
Yep.
I mean, when I was growing up, I never knew a single person with a peanut allergy.
Yep.
And now it seems like one out of three or four kids is allergic to peanuts to some extent. What is your analysis of?
Well, my analysis is the, Joyce, I use the canary story. Okay, and I don't know if you've ever heard this or not.
The canary in the coal mines?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, not only in the coal mines, but you see, I come from an area where there's a lot of mining, Joyce, like in Sudbury, but I, you know,
right.
My hometown is Shania Twain's hometown. And
well, just to fill everybody in, when they go down into a mine, they take a canary in a cage. Because if there's any noxious gas, the natural gases that escape down there, it has no odor. It only has an odor in your kitchen because we've added it so that we can find it. But normally it has no odor at all. But if there is gas down there, it'll kill the canary first.
Yeah.
And if the canary keels over, you better get out of there pretty fast.
Exactly. And that's these children, Joyce. That's
mm-hmm.
what's happening to their canaries. With all the changes, you know, 85,000 new chemicals have been created since World War II. Most of them are found in our kitchen, in our foods, and in plastic, cleaning products, you name it. Bombarded. Now, Joyce, you might have got away with it. I might have got away with it. But there's a lot of canaries out there. There's a lot of children that whatever deficiency, it seems to set them off. It's, you know, like this. The straw that breaks the camel's back, for whatever reason.
I mean, I'm sensitive to hydrocarbons, which means that if somebody hands me a receipt that's done with this thermal paper,
yeah.
or if I have a carbonless carbon paper, I have to go wash my hands pretty fast because my eyes are going to begin to tear, and I get a relatively mild allergic reaction. But I have a friend who has to carry a bee sting kit because she will get a severe allergic reaction to those kinds of things.
Yep.
So that's just one example of the kinds of pollutants that are constantly around us. I mean, I can't go anywhere without being handed a receipt that's in thermal paper.
Yeah.
And
Joyce, what I tell my patients is...
Most people don't react to it. And as you say, I feel like the canary.
You're the canary.
Line.
And I tell people, listen, what are you going to do? Leave the planet? Like, I mean, where do you escape? And that's why, you know, that... This is where when you see any kind of deficiency or allergy sensitivity, this is where this testing comes in really handy, because then you can see if there's any area that you can build up.
Mm-hmm.
And I really work a lot, too, Joyce, on the digestive system and making sure that, you know, you're uptaking your nutrients, because a lot of people are eating, but they don't uptake it. Their body's not absorbing it for whatever reason. So these lead to sensitivities. Exactly.
The chemicals in their bodies aren't there in the right proportions to break down the food
mm-hmm.
and get all the good stuff out of it before the rest of it goes out.
Yeah. And the good news, there are biomarkers. You can look at these things. Testing is available. There are physicians that out there that, like myself, that do these kind of things, and I'm trying to train more and more.
What kind of a physician should you look for? I mean,
well,
you know, you have this list from your health insurance company that says doctors A, B, and C are in our plan, but how do I go about determining that, or what sort of a specialist am I looking for?
Well, the thing is, and that's a very good question, Joyce, and I try and get people to do a little bit of homework on this, because if their doctor is not all even that receptive to doing some of the some of these tests. You can do a few of them at, you know, the pH is easy. You can do that yourself. You can do a little home kit. They're easy to do. They're you can pick them up at a pharmacy or even a chemistry store, whatever. Pick up a pH strip because that'll tell you a lot. But I tell my patients, look, you know, even in the book, here's the test that you want done that your doctor won't routinely do. One of them costs $25 in the United States. It's called C-reactive protein. And your doctor will not do it unless he's looking for arthritis or rheumatoid arthritis. But what they found out, Joyce, about this test, it can determine up to 7 years ahead of time whether you're having a heart attack, you're going to get a heart attack or not, or a stroke. And they won't do it because it's sort of a new test. It's been around for the insurance companies in the United States. I know this for a fact. Most of them pay for it. But if you don't ask your doctor, he won't do it. So I tell people, look, you've got to sort of, unless you've got a doctor that is really up on things, you ask. Make sure you get the test done. And they will do it because all they have to do is check it off. And I mean, in Canada, the government actually pays for this test.
Now, it's one thing to get such a test. As you say, you can go to a chemistry store and get a pH strip. But that's, of course, not the end of the story. Now you have to interpret that and understand what to do.
And that's where my book comes in, Joyce. I tell them very easily, here's what you do. Here's the foods. Here's an anti-inflammatory that I say these are Dr. Martin's 10 favorite anti-inflammatory foods. And, you know, you got to increase that. Here are inflammatory foods which you should avoid. Because if your C-reactive protein test is coming back and it's high, your doctor tells you it's high, then you better do something about it. And okay. So, you know, unfortunately, Joyce, that not all physicians are sort of up on this, but it doesn't mean that you can't get it done because they will do it. And it's a very inexpensive test, could save your life.
So and you can work with your doctor and
exactly.
ask the doctor to help you do the testing part, and then with the help of the book and in conference with your doctor, you can do the analysis and decide where to go from there.
Sure, and it's easy to read, Joyce. It's not hard to understand.
You're saying that much of many of your recommendations, there are things that you can do yourself at home.
Yeah, and most of them are done with food. I do talk about a few supplements, Joyce, and those are they're easy. I talked about foundational ones, depending on what your tests are coming back, because sometimes you might have to supplement your diet a little bit. But I'm more into foods than anything else. Foods, like I say, are a very powerful medication. If some of these things are off, boy, I'm telling you, just by increasing certain foods in your diet will make a huge change. They're power-packed from cholesterol to inflammation to free radical damage to changing your pH. It's all done with food.
Right, but Mama Nature knows how to make that balance correctly, and not every baker does. And so a lot of the things that are being added to the processed foods are not so great for us, right? So not all food is great.
Yeah.
Fresh foods, organic foods are better than the ones that have been messed with by the manufacturers.
Absolutely, Joyce. And that's again, something we have to deal with in this day and age.
In your book, you have a couple of tantalizing quotes. "We are digging our grave with our teeth," is one of them. "It's not drugs and alcohol that are the drugs of choice these days. It's food. And what you put in your mouth every day will either be a positive or a negative experience due to our high-stressed and fast-paced lifestyles." So we're going to take a little break here, and when we come back, we'll talk some more with Dr. Martin about food choices and some of the differences between the foods we eat today and the foods that we were offered 50 years ago. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
We're back now speaking with Dr. Anthony Martin, author of the book Medical Crisis, Secrets Your Doctor Won't Share With You. And basically his secrets are that there are four gauges that are essential for maintaining good health that your doctor likely has not shared with you. One is a measure of your energy. One is to measure your pH. The third is to measure the level of free radicals. And the fourth is a measure of the amount of inflammation, inflammatory process that's going on in your body. And then knowing how to correct imbalances in any of these four gauges. And just before the break, we began talking about how foods are different today than they used to be.
You know, food isn't what it used to be. I have a whole section in my book on milk, for example. A lot of people
tell us about milk.
Well, you know, a lot of people think they're lactose intolerant. That's the milk sugar. And yes, some of them are, but most people, if they're intolerant to anything, is because it's the casein in milk. It's the protein in milk that really can have an effect. As a matter of fact, I was just reading a study today that there seems to be an overwhelming link to pasteurized milk and autism. Now, it doesn't mean it's the only thing.
Really?
Yeah, it's a new study that just came out. I was quite astounded by it because, I like I said, I have a whole section in my book. Like, milk isn't what it used to be, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, because of the hormones in cows and, you know, the uh-huh. the pesticides, the herbicide, they, you know, we're...
The pasteurization process is a way of killing the bacteria, and that's certainly a good thing because uh-huh. it saved a lot of children from some pretty nasty diseases. But as
yeah.
you say, there beyond pasteurization, there are other things that are being done that are changing milk from the way it used to be.
Yeah, and a lot of people, I'm going to say, Joyce, a lot of, and I mean this, I don't think I'm stretching it out, that probably 10% of the population just does not do well with milk. And that is a way, like I'm saying, it's probably a hundredfold compared to what it was 20 or 30 years ago. It's just people have developed sensitivities. Go back to the canaries and milk,
right.
Now where it used to be such an important staple in our diet, to a lot of people has become a real problem. So what do we do about that?
So let's spend a few minutes talking about milk then, since you brought this up. So it's not just, and I'm assuming that the pasteurization process is not the problem. You started saying pasteurized milk was the problem, but it's not the pasteurization process. It's other things about the milk, right?
Well, it's the hormones, right? In
right.
cows
so,
and
one,
the
way cows are fed.
Exactly. Pesticides, herbicides. So if you can get an organic milk, of course.
Right. So organic milk would be preferable. It's a little bit more money, but
yep.
it doesn't have all of these. The hormones and the pesticides are,
yep.
are two particularly problematic things.
Yep.
And hormones because they inject the cattle with hormones in order to grow them faster. You can get a calf to market much more rapidly if you feed
yeah.
it growth hormone, but we don't have any definitive information yet on what that growth hormone is doing to the people who are eating.
Yeah, and one thing we do know, though, Joyce, here's what we do know, is that people today, and I said this a little earlier, but when it specifically about milk has become a mucus-producing.
Right.
I always tell parents, listen, if your kids are having recurring ear infections, mm-hmm. asthma, stop the milk. And if the mucus dries up, you know they have an allergy to that casein. Because what happens is the hormones have really made it's inflammatory by nature because of the amount of estrogen. And cells become estrogen receptive. Now, women know all about that in their menopausal years. But we're seeing a whole society now being affected by inflammatory mechanisms. One of them is milk. Now, it's not always. Like, for me, it doesn't bother me at all, Joyce.
But
like I said, a huge number of the population now is being bothered because milk isn't what it used to be. It's been changed. And, you know, like some would say for the better, but it's not for the better if the majority or at least a good percentage of the population is being affected by it.
Well, the primary reason that the milk was changed was in order to increase production.
Yep.
And while that's admirable and it's helped the farmers, it may or may not be helping the people who are drinking the milk.
Exactly.
And so that's what we have to go back and determine. Now, is there a way to turn back the clock? Can I get the milk of 1940 by going back to organic milk or not?
Well, I think you can. I mean, I think there will always be a few people that will be sensitive, and those people should avoid it like the plague. But the majority of people, I think, if you take a good, an organic milk, would make an enormous difference. And so, yeah, like I'd like to turn the clock. I understand. I'm very realistic, Joyce. I understand. In my position, I'm dealing with people that have to live every day. They have a budget. Most people have budgets they have to live within. And so I am very, I try and be as pragmatic as I can be because I understand
right.
that in a perfect world, we would all drink organic milk and, we would have organic meats and fruits and no pesticides, no herbicides. There'd be nothing in the air.
Right.
And this and that, but we're not going to have that. So
well, one of the things I've noticed, people complain that produce that's organic is more expensive. But if you take all those prepared foods, everything in a little box, all those instant things,
yeah.
that really don't save you that much time. Maybe instead of 20 minutes preparation time, it takes 12. But still, it doesn't take that much longer to do it from fresh. And so if you're doing fresh foods and not the stuff in boxes and not the prefabricated cakes, your grocery bill is going to be a whole bunch lower because those processed foods are expensive.
They sure are. And that's why, I see myself as, Joyce, is somebody that's almost like a coach and a motivator
mm-hmm.
to get people to take responsibility. And you said that, Joyce, that's what your mission is too, is that people look at their bodies and say, look, I'll tell you, in Canada, Joyce, and I know I really follow the politics in the States. I've always been interested in that. And, the number one issue to most people in Canada and the United States is health care. Well, I say this right. in the start of my book, as I say, all the tea in China is not going to pay for sickness care, because that's what we have in Canada and the United States. We don't have health care. We have sickness care. Generally, it's when you get sick, we'll take care of you. Well, if you wait till that happens, we know in Canada where, our health care system is so-called free. It's far from free. We're taxed till the cows come home, Joyce, and we still don't have enough money.
Yeah, one way or another.
One way or another, you pay for it, right?
Right.
And they're finding out now there's just not enough doctors. There's not enough room in the hospitals. There's not enough of anything in Canada, and there won't be in the United States either if we don't take responsibility. So even if we take one person at a time, and I have my own radio show, I write these books and that, I try and get people to look. I'm not asking you to get your PhD in nutrition, but I'm trying to get you to understand. Because gone are the days that we're going to use the big Latin words in medicine to keep everybody ignorant. What we want to do is educate people. People are really smart, Joyce. I find that. They are. And if you get them motivated to take responsibility for their own bodies, understand, okay, you can't leave the planet, but use your the brain that God has given you and think. And
right.
Think,
and the way you shop and the labels you read or don't read, it's amazing what they're putting into foods these days.
Yeah.
You don't expect it. For example, someone was telling me the other day, maple syrup, what could be wrong with maple syrup? Well, when they boil it, they don't want it to just make too much foam, so they use, quote, an anti-foaming agent. What's an anti-foaming agent? It's a piece of beef or lard. So our maple syrup has traces of beef or lard in it.
Yeah.
Now, that blew me away.
Isn't that sad, eh?
And it's not on the label because it's not, quote, an ingredient, unquote.
Yeah.
And it's underneath the volume of percentage that it takes to be required to put that on the label.
Yeah.
So there are an amazing number of little additives that are just being snuck into our foods, not necessarily with evil intent, but we are putting into our bodies things that we don't expect to be putting there.
Yeah, and again, Joyce, and that's what's happening, and you're getting, what I see, like I said, from diabetes, type 2 diabetes in children, to you name it.
Right. What about the fat-free things? People think when they buy something that's fat-free, that that's a good thing for them. What's your opinion?
Well, it's when you sweep something clean, Joyce, you're always adding something else in it, eh? Right? And what the problem with the fat-free? Again, I used to scream at this in the 80s and the 90s. Oh, this is a fat-free diet. Well, first of all, your body just doesn't work without fat. None of your hormones are able to be transported properly without fat. And you need a good, there's good, bad, and ugly when it comes to fat, right? And
right.
When you eliminate all fat from your diet or most of it, you are really setting your body up to for
well,
disease.
Well, if you eliminate all fat, your bowels won't work correctly.
Exactly. And so, it's the idea of getting these good fats. You need some saturated fats, and polyunsaturated are even better. But you need a balance of it a bit, and you try and minimize. You're going to get some saturated fats even in milk.
Here's one example. I mean, for our office, we were picking up some coffee milk, and I spotted this fat-free half and half. Now, that sounds very attractive, right? So I bought one for the office. So I get here, and I'm reading the fine print on it, and they took out the fat, all right, but they added the corn syrup.
Yeah. And the high fructose corn syrup, I write about that in that book because it's used in so many things, and it is it's dangerous.
Milk, not realizing that it's got high fructose corn syrup in it.
Yeah.
So you got to read those labels these days, gang. Everything that they put into there could have a little influence on you.
Yes.
It's subtle, but it's there, and our bodies respond to subtle.
Absolutely, and Joyce, it's so important again for, to get information on these things and just to do a little bit of research. Start reading labels. I get people to understand what they're doing when they're reading a label, and as much as possible.
Can you tell us a little bit about chronic fatigue syndrome and the kinds of things you've discovered that that make people tired and that might perk you up?
Yeah, and it's interesting because the number one reason that people, Joyce, go to see their physicians is for fatigue. And it's...
Really?
Yeah. And number one reason since the year 2000, and it's number one in 2008, apparently, too, as we go through it. It's still the number one reason. People are exhausted today. And, I go back, and when I did my thesis is that I, because of the testing that we were doing, We discovered that what happens is that the adrenal glands, those little stress glands on top of the kidneys, really become suppressed. And adrenal glands are very, very important for regulating your blood sugar, for weight, for your body's natural anti-inflammatory response. So many things from the thyroid to the sexual hormones. Everything, it seems, are those little battery packs, those little adrenal glands. I call them the ever-ready batteries.
Huh.
And what happened, Joyce, in starting in the 80s, chronic fatigue or the yuppie flu or whatever they called it in the 80s started to become like an epidemic. As a matter of fact, 90 million people in the Western world, according to the World Health Organization, have chronic fatigue syndrome. 90 million. And this syndrome is a new syndrome. It was never here before in the sense of much like AIDS. People say, well, what's new under the sun? Mm-hmm. Well, there are some new things under the sun. One of them is AIDS. When I went to medical school, there was no such thing as AIDS
right. In
the 70s. Nobody ever heard of it. And nobody would deny that AIDS is a disease today. It's a major killer. But so is chronic fatigue. Chronic fatigue syndrome is a terrible disorder, affects 95% women, and I believe it's because of those adrenal glands that it affects mostly women. Women who are under a lot of stress environmentally, physically and emotionally. Stress affects those adrenal glands and wears those little ever-ready battery packs down. They're just above your kidneys. Mm-hmm. And everything starts to go off kilter, Joyce, with it. And it's interesting because we did a 500-case study in the early 1990s, and we followed people who were medically diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome and with questionnaires, follow-ups, where they were feeling, testing, biomarker testing that I've been talking about earlier. And we have no doubt that this is a major order, disorder. And the nice thing about it is, even though you can't cure chronic fatigue, is that if you make the changes that I talk about in my book, I have a whole section, by the way, on chronic fatigue syndrome and what's new in chronic fatigue, mm-hmm. and fibromyalgia, because they are sister diseases, by the way. A person can do really, really well. The body will regenerate. Those little battery packs will come back, not quite what they used to be, but at least quality of life, Joyce, goes way up as long as they make major changes. And the number one change that they have to make is food, getting rid of food sensitivities and that. So chronic fatigue, yeah, that's my baby. I still see, I still specialize in it, and it's led me down the road to a lot of other things in nutrition, but this is probably the most exciting part for me.
Thank you very much, Dr. Martin. We'll be back in just a moment to converse some more with Dr. Martin about fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome and the wonderful advances that he's made in understanding the impact of nutrition on those conditions. Please go to powerfulpatient.org on the internet. You will find there the handout that goes with this show with information about Dr. Martin, his book, the websites that we've mentioned, and other background on this topic. And as always, we will appreciate your support very much. Please donate to the Cancer Research Fund and bring us back another day and help us to fund one more research project this season. Stay with us now. We'll be right back.
So your book outlines the kinds of things that you should do to assess your own situation and then to begin to make some changes in your diet. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And what exactly, how the adrenal gland works, what happened. I talk about, the straw that breaks the camel's back and how people have been set up. And I talk about even their childhood in a lot of ways. And because we saw such, in these 500 cases, Joyce, we saw so many, of common denominators. And so people will worry there. If they've had, exhaustion for a long time, they'll go, well, that's me. That's what happened to me or something like similar. And but the nice thing, we do give a plan on really recharging those batteries and making yourself feel better. But it really does become a responsibility of a person, because what happens, Joyce, especially with chronic fatigue, is that medicine even today is reticent to acknowledge this disease, because most laboratory tests, most, will come back within normal limits. And it's only when you do specialized testing, especially the adrenal gland, will you find out, and we talk about that, what to ask your doctor to do. Because a lot of people have fallen through the cracks, Joyce, and haven't got even a good diagnosis, like they've been talked about depression when it's adrenal gland exhaustion. Well, there's a big difference between the two, and the treatment is big in terms of difference,
Right, and sometimes antidepressants can make an adrenal problem worse.
Exactly, so that's got to be diagnosed properly. And again, so we go over a very careful history and do the testing that's required to really differentiate the diagnosis. So
tell us a little about fibromyalgia. What is that? What does it feel like?
Well, fibro is no fun. it is a sister disorder to chronic fatigue syndrome. A majority of the people that get fibro have chronic fatigue, and so that's why we call them, if not sisters, at least cousins. And it is an adrenal gland problem again, where cortisol, the major thing, is that cortisol, the body's natural anti-inflammatory hormone, is you know, is not secreted properly because of the adrenal glands being affected. So fibromyalgia is a pain. Rather, it's almost, Joyce, it's probably a very easy a word would be arthritis of the muscle rather than arthritis of the joint. And this inflammation never really goes down, and the pain can travel. And usually people with fibro will have a sleep disorder, and their hormones are off. And again, I always relate it back to those adrenal glands. But it is no fun, because this is the type of pain that most medications really do not touch. This type of pain, very, very painful for people, and they can't get over it because the testing that they get done usually will come back within normal limits. And fibromyalgia, at least in the past, has only been diagnosed when you've eliminated all other disease.
Right, because there's no particular test that you can do that comes back and says, yes, this is fibromyalgia,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it really needs to have a careful history taken. And I go through that in my book, and actually I give a lot of seminars to physicians to teach them how to diagnose fibromyalgia.
Right, and this is in a category of diseases where you are going to be in a better position to get the data collected for your doctor than your doctor is going to be.
Yeah.
If you wait and go to the doctor and just try to do an oral an oral history in the doctor's office, you're going to forget a lot of this because we don't remember pain. We don't remember the patterns. And so usually what I tell people is to keep a log. And your book also gives some guidelines on what kinds of information to collect. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And again, Joyce, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that today, in this day and age, gone are the days where you rely on your physician for your health care. You need to use a physician properly.
Right.
And the more work that a patient has done in terms of just getting information, knowing what tests to ask for, asking the right questions, I demand that my patients, when they come to my office, bring a pen and a paper, a notepad, and have their questions ready. And do homework before you go see your doctor.
Right.
So that you can ask the question, then check him off. Make sure he's answered he or she has answered every one of those questions. Because we need to take that responsibility. And it's coming, Joyce. It really is coming where people are, are really buying into this. And we,
right. Well,
you know,
we have so little time these days with the doctor. We
exactly.
have, 12 to 20 minutes or thereabouts. And so if you don't prepare and come with your data already collected, you're probably not going to get your questions answered, and you're probably not going to go away with the right diagnosis.
Mm.
You really have to prepare for this experience. But if you do that, and if you partner with your doctor, then, as you say, you have a very good opportunity of making some good headway, even with these somewhat anomalous conditions.
Absolutely. And then, you know, and again, it's not rocket science. You don't really, and it's amazing, there are so many tools today, you know, programs
right.
and shows and, you know, the Internet. You can learn a lot. People, you know, they don't have to know everything, but it's amazing when you put, because your physician,
right.
you know, he's busy or she's busy, but, you know, it's amazing when you ask them the right questions, they're smart people.
That's
they,
right, and they appreciate a patient
who's
curious.
They do.
Now, caution, though, don't go in there and demand that your doctor do X, Y, and Z to being demanded to do things. And you don't go in and say, well, I've decided I have fibromyalgia. Probably a better approach is to go in and say, you know, I've been reading this book on fibromyalgia. It seems to fit. Can you help me do some testing that would help me determine whether it is or isn't?
And you know,
what other suggestions
that's right.
would you give people?
Yeah, and you know, they, I believe that, you know, physicians today are they're busy. They want people to be well, and you know, it's amazing. I think there's a paradigm shift going on here, and it's you know, like I said, I've been around a long time, Joyce. I've watched the difference between the 70s and now. and in medicine, and there's a big change. People are, you know, they're demanding it, and I think, you know, slowly and surely we'll see a real shift going on in terms of these preventative things that will make our system a true healthcare system rather than a disease system.
Right, and we do have to shortcut this. There have been some studies recently looking at chronic diseases, and what they mean by chronic diseases are the little naggy things that get worse over time, you know, arthritis and diabetes and things like that. And the amount of dollars from the healthcare system and also the time lost on the job is staggering. It's just staggering. And so all of us need to take some action on this for the sake of our own health, number one, but also because it makes us happier, it's going to keep us at work longer, and just feeling better about ourselves.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Martin. I appreciate this. And tell us again the title of your book and where one can get it.
Okay. And it's Medical Crisis, Secrets Your Doctor Won't Share With You. And it's available two ways. One, at my website, drmartin.ca, Canadians, of course. But there's a way to get it in the States on .com. It's drawmartin, Dr. A.W. Martin. .com. So drawmartin.com, and there's a toll-free number there, too, that people can order it. It's 1-8 in Canada, and the book is $24.95, and they'll love every minute of it, and it's easy to read, Joyce.
So is that Canadian dollars?
That's Canadian dollars. So
very good.
I'm trying to think. You know what? Our dollar is just about even now, so you know, it's nice for us Canadians.
US dollar is dropping. That's right.
So thank you very much, Dr. Martin, for speaking with us today, and I hope that you will take a look at Dr. Martin's little book here. It's very interesting and really gives us some insights into how to check and see where your own body is, what your own body is telling you, and how to respond to those signals and try to stay away from more serious problems. In particular, if you are suffering from fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome or any serious drop in your energy level, I think the advice that he has in this book is very useful. These are conditions that are difficult to pin down and difficult to treat. And he's got some very practical advice here that he's worked out with his wife over the last 15 years of working with her with this condition. So it's some of the most practical advice that I've seen for these two pretty mysterious conditions. And I'd be interested in your own feedback on that. If you are in that position, clearly, if we learn to respond to what our body is saying to us and hopefully stay away from more serious disease processes, hopefully you'll never need the book that we're going to talk about next week. And but we will be speaking with Cindy Barclay about her book called That Damn Dialysis. And it's a very cleverly written book. It is one of the best educational books that I've seen about dialysis because it doesn't just speak to you in the heavy-duty medical terms that are usually used in such a book. She actually introduces us to one of the patients, and it's actually a fictional character, an African-American man, who's very charming, and we go through with him the human side of dialysis, how it impacts someone's life, and how you can manage really quite well through this process and use it to support you through a difficult time in your life. So if you or someone you know is going through dialysis, this is a great book to read, and I hope you'll join us for the discussion next week with Cindy Barclay. So meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient.